We're not talking about the parable of the unjust steward. Parable of the unjust steward found in Luke 16, 1 to 13. Beginning at verse 1, the text reads, "He also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought against him that this man was wasting his goods. And so he called him and said to him, 'What is it that I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward.' And the steward said within himself, 'What shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me, and I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I have resolved what to do. Then when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.' So he called every one of his master's debtors to him, and he said to the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' And he said, 100 measures of oil. And so he said to him, 'Take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. And he said to another, 'How much do you owe?' So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, 'Take your bill and write 80. And so the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting home. And who is unfaithful in what is least is faithful also in much. He who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give to you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he'll hate one and love the other, or he'll be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." That is the parable of the unjust steward. William Taylor said, "The interpretation of this parable has occasioned more perplexity to the commentators than any other in the Gospels, with perhaps the exception of that of the laborers in the vineyard." There are some things that are difficult, obviously, in this parable. Trench observed that this parable, of which the difficulties are exceedingly great, have been the subject of manifold and those the most opposite interpretations. There's been a great deal of abuse of this parable and misunderstanding of the parable, and we'll try to work through some of those difficulties, but let's first talk about the context in which it sets. This is obviously in Luke 16, so if we look at the context, these are the 13 verses that we have in our text. Just before that, in chapter 15, if you will, in verses 1 and 2, there is a focus on the self-righteous spirit. And that is the beginning of those parables in Luke chapter 15, as Jesus was talking about the lost sheep and the lost coin and the lost son. As he dealt with those, notice the beginning of that at verse 1, that the tax collectors and the scribes and the Pharisees murmured against Jesus, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." They were too righteous and lifted themselves up with pride to associate with sinners. They couldn't believe that he would do that. And so it deals with self-righteousness. Let's go further into Luke 16. And on the other side of this, at verse 14, this ends at verse 13, there is a focus on covetousness. If you will, at verse 14, the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard those things and they derided him. And Jesus focuses on material things in this parable. The Pharisees didn't like that because they were lovers of money. And so there was a focus on covetousness. And here is a focus on self-righteousness on the other side. And sandwiched in between that is this parable. Well, it's helpful to know who is being addressed here in this context. And the first thing I want you to notice is in verse 1 of chapter 16. He spoke to the disciples. And he said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man. So first he was speaking to the disciples. But I want you to notice further in verse 14... that it was in the hearing of the Pharisees. Even though he was speaking to the disciples and teaching the disciples some lesson, the Pharisees heard that because when they heard these things, they derided him. They didn't like what he said. And so it was said in their hearing as well. So what is the point of the parable? What's the emphasis of the parable? Well, first, it exposes covetousness. It must have because the Pharisees didn't like it at verse 14. And yet there is a lesson there for God's people. It exposes the covetousness of the Pharisees. It certainly did that. And there is a lesson there for God's people in the midst of that. Taylor observed that the design of our Lord evidently being to teach the believers in self-righteous respectability that there are other ways of misusing the portion of which God has given than by riotous living. Now, riotous living was dealt with in chapter 15. And there's other ways to be wasteful than just riotous living. and it points to that. But it also and primarily emphasizes prudence. Prudence in spiritual matters among the people of God. That like we see that of worldly people in their pursuit of material goods, as we see in this context, here is one who is not given to spirituality, but he's in pursuit of material things, and he uses wisdom and prudence to accomplish that, that we need the same kind of prudence in accomplishing that which is spiritual. So let's talk about three things. Let's start with the parable itself, found in verses 1 to 8. If we have the lights on, Larry, if you mind. In verses 1 and 2, I want us to begin by noticing this parable that the rich man calls his steward into account. Notice in verses 1 and 2 that the text says there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought that he was wasting his goods. And so he called him and said, "What is it I hear? Give an account of your stewardship. You can no longer be steward." Let's just work through the parable and get those, and then we'll talk about Jesus' comments, if you will, at verses 9 through 13. First of all, the text mentions there was a steward, that is a manager, the New King James so renders that. That is one who oversees the business affairs of another. And so here is a man, according to verse 1, that was a rich man, and he hires somebody to be his steward that oversees his financial affairs and sees to his business matters. Well, we have examples of stewards throughout the Bible. Eliezer, Abraham's steward in Genesis 15 and 24. Joseph was Potiphar's steward, you remember, in the book of Genesis in 39 and in verse 4. We all are stewards in some sense. The Bible talks about that. 1 Corinthians 4 and in verse 2, we're all stewards of all that God has given you. God's given you blessings. He's given you time. He's given you money. He's given you talents. And we're stewards of all that God has given us. Now notice in verse 1, the steward was accused of wasting the man's goods, the text says. And you would expect that to mean that he, as he calls him in, look at verse 2, he called him in and said, "What is I hear of you? Give an account of your stewardship." And you would expect that to involve requiring him to give up-to-date books. I hear you're wasting my money, you're wasting and squandering my goods, and you have not been what you should have been, so give an account of that. Give me some up-to-date books of what's going on in my affairs. So he called him into account, and then he fired him. It's done, it's over, it's finished. And you're going to be removed from the stewardship. Though it wasn't immediate, as the text is going to indicate. His subsequent actions indicate and supply us with the information that the charges must have been true. That verse 1, that an accusation was made against this man, he's wasting his goods, must not have been just a rumor, because as he takes us into account, he never denies that he is wasting his goods. The text never gives indication of that, but his subsequent action shows that he had mishandled goods, and so the charges must have been true. Exactly what had he done, we are not told. In what way had he wasted his master's goods? We're not told. But he had acted in his own interest and not the interest of his master, and evidence of that is what he does subsequent to this. That he's interested in his own good and not that of his master. Let's begin at verse 3 now. Verses 1 and 2, a steward is called, a rich man calls his steward into account. Now in verses 3 to 7, to get to the heart of what this is about, before Jesus makes his application at verse 8, the steward plans to take care of himself. And so he wonders, now what am I going to do? He devises a plan for his future. He still seems to be in a position of power. He's not yet been removed. He must have been told that you're done, and so you're going to work out the week, or you're going to work another day or 2 days or whatever it may be. So you're going to work another period of time, but then you're done and you're finished because you've been wasting my goods. So he's still in power at this point. So I want you to notice in verses 3 and 4 that the text says, he said, "What shall I do? My master is taking the stewardship away from me." He said, "I can't dig, and to beg I am ashamed." In other words, you must not be able to dig. The New American Standard, New International said, he's not strong enough. I'm not strong enough to get out and dig. I can't do that kind of thing. And I'm ashamed to beg, meaning he's too proud for that. He perhaps has this mentality that he's in management and he can't do the manual labor. I'm in a position of managing. I've been a steward. I'm not to be out digging. I'm too proud to beg. I'm not going to do that. I've got to devise a plan somehow. And so notice that he concentrates on his future. Look at verse 4. He said, "Something has to be done, and has to be done quickly. I've resolved what I will do. When I'm put out of the stewardship, that they may receive me into their houses." I'm going to have to devise a plan. I've got to do it quickly because I'm about to be removed. I've got to act quickly, and I've got to take care of myself. So what did he do? In verses 5 to 7, he reduces the debtor's debt. So it reduces the bills of those who are debtors. These may have been merchants that had accepted all and weed on consignment. We don't know for sure. So he has the debtor to write in his own handwriting, realizing then that they should be thankful indeed for the favor that was done. Can you imagine if you go into some business where you owe them a great sum of money, you go to the bank, and the bank has you to write it down for yourself. I want you to take these records, and how much do you owe? Well, I owe $100,000 on this house. Well, sit down and write down and scratch out the $100,000 and write $50 below that. You would greatly appreciate it because you wrote it in your own hand. And that's what he does. And perhaps there's another reason for that we'll get to in a moment. So he comes to the first. Notice this at verse 7. He comes to the first, or verse 6. How much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of oil. That's 800 gallons of oil. And he said, write 50. That is 50 measures. So he cut it by 50%. You say you owe 800 gallons of oil? You're going to pay back 400 gallons of oil. That's all you owe. We just reduced your debt by half. He came to the second debtor and he said, how much do you owe? Look at verse 7. He said, 100 measures of wheat, 1,000 bushels of wheat. And so he cut his by 20%. And so he reduced the debt greatly. On both occasions, what I want you to notice is he was focusing on himself. He is not thinking about the debtors, nor is he thinking about his master. This is not proper use. He has no real authority to do this, though he is a steward. He is taking advantage of his master. That's exactly what he'd been accused of that he's been doing all along. He's abusing his master. But he's trying to gain favors with the debtors. He doesn't care about the debtors. He's thinking about himself. And we're going to see that at verse 8 here in just a second. So notice at verse 8, and this is where you might underline, for the sons of this world are more shrewd than the generation, in their generation than the sons of light. He is commended for his shrewdness, is the point of verse 8. This gets to the heart of what the parable is about. He is not commended for his dishonesty. Was he dishonest in saying to the man, you owe 800, write down, let's change that bill that you only owe 400 gallons of oil? That's dishonest. He is not commended for his dishonesty. He was fired for that, in fact. But what he's commended for is his prudence, his foresight, his diligence, his focus, and his wisdom. I want you to think about that. He's commended because he used some wisdom and some foresight and some insight, and using what opportunities he had to accomplish his goal, even though his goal may be wrong. And it had two effects. How was that? Well, the debtor is going to be grateful and going to help him out when he needs help. Isn't that what he said? What am I going to do? I can't dig and I'm not able to dig. I'm not strong enough to dig. And I'm ashamed to beg. I can't do that. I've got to take care of myself. So I've got to think quickly what I'm going to do. I'm going to take these debtors and reduce their debt, and they're going to owe me a favor. And when I get out from here, when I get fired, when I get out, they'll give me some things and they'll take care of me because I took care of them. It has a second effect, as some have suggested. It may be that if that doesn't work, then he could blackmail them because they altered the bill in their own hand. He had them to write it in their own handwriting. That's pretty shrewd. And when the time comes, he very well may could put some pressure on them because of that. But I want you to notice this. He's preparing for his own future. He is wise in taking care of himself. And here's the point. That the world, and this is what Jesus is saying in verse 8, the world uses better judgment and is often more clever and shrewd in accomplishing their goal than God's people are in accomplishing theirs. It is not saying the people of the world are better, but it's saying sometimes they use more wisdom in accomplishing what they want to in the evil realm than we do in accomplishing what is true and what's right and what's best. They're more shrewd. They use more foresight and more diligence and focus and wisdom than do the people of God. So go back to verse 8 and you might underline. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. That's the point of the parable. There is something to be learned from that. But now Jesus makes comments now. Verses 1 through 8 is the parable. There was a rich man who called his steward into account. The steward then took care of things and altered some things and took care of himself. Then at verse 8, Jesus made a comment that here's what I learned. Here's what you need to learn from that. And that the children of the world are often more shrewd and wise than the children of light. Now, verses 9 to 13 are the comments that Jesus made. Remember, he's talking to the disciples, but the Pharisees are listening. And what did he say? Well, beginning at verse 9, Jesus makes a point about using material blessings to receive the eternal. Go back to verse 9. And I say to you, who's he talking to? The disciples, verse 1. Make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon that when you fail, they may receive you in their everlasting habitations. What is he talking about? Well, let's talk about unrighteous mammon first. It has reference to money, to riches, to possessions, not just money itself, but the things that money could buy. Unrighteous mammon is called unrighteous in contrast. Look at verse 11 when he talks about the true riches. And so these are unrighteous in contrast to the true riches, eternal spiritual things. So unrighteous mammon. But notice again at verse 9, he said, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, as the steward did. He made friends. He used it wisely to reach his goal. He said, I'm about to lose my job. I'm about to lose my position. I'm about to lose a place to live. And I need some help here. And I've got to figure out a way I can get some folks to help me. So I'm going to use my access to this money, though it's not mine. And these riches, though they're not mine, I'm going to use that to accomplish my goal. And my goal is to take care of myself. And so that he did. He used unrighteous mammon to reach his goal. He used it wisely. Notice at verse 9, the idea of making friends would seem to be equal to receiving and being received into everlasting habitation. So as the steward had used the unrighteous mammon to make friends, then we are to use it to make friends. That doesn't mean the urging of Jesus is not take your money and try to buy some friendship. That's not what he's saying. But use it to accomplish your goal, which is parallel then to the end of verse 9, that you may be received into everlasting habitations. Knowing that it's going to fail. Notice at verse 9, he said that when you fail or when it fails, one text says. Meaning what? Well, when it fails, just like this man, his stewardship was failing. It was about to end. So he has a period of time he can use the stewardship and it's not going to last long. And as long as he's still got hold of that and he can still use it, he uses the stewardship to accomplish his purpose. To take care of himself. And what he's saying is that the same thing is going to happen to your material things. Use them while you can because they're going to fail. They're coming to an end. They're not going to last forever, just like the stewardship doesn't last forever. Caldwell observed in his commentary on the Gospel of Luke concerning this passage that Jesus implores us to use earthly goods in view of eternity and our eternal spiritual dwelling. So whatever God has given us of our material blessings, use that to accomplish your goal of your material. Not material, but your spiritual goal. Of your eternal home in heaven. Not meaning you buy your way to heaven. But are you using what excess you have to material things wisely to try to accomplish your goal, as well as those who are the people of the world using theirs to accomplish their goal, like the steward did? That's his point. He just made some application in his comment at verse 9. But let's go further. In verses 10 through 12, he talks about the principle of stewardship now. And what does he say about stewardship? Well, he says that we must be a good steward of a little in order to be trusted with much more. So notice at verse 10, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. Who is unjust in that which is least is unjust in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you the trust in true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? Jesus is driving home the point that we must be a good steward of little in order to be trusted with more. Taylor observed this on this passage. He said, you may allege that you have too little of this world's goods. To be too concerned, to be much concerned with the truth which has now been announced, but that is a mistake, for fidelity does not depend on the amount entrusted to you, but on the use to which that amount, however small, is put by you, and that again depends on your sense of responsibility as a steward of God. You see his point? You say, I haven't been given a great deal. I don't have thousands of dollars. I don't have millions of dollars. I only just have just a small handful. I barely get by. I just live from paycheck to paycheck. I don't have much. We don't have a big house. We don't have much. So consequently, I don't have this problem of being a steward. Yes, God has blessed you with whatever you have. And the application of the text is use whatever you have to accomplish your goal. What is your goal? What is your goal? And are you using your material goods wisely? Furthermore, in stewardship, the point is that we must be good stewards of the material to be blessed eternally. Littmer observed that the stewardship of material possessions is a training ground for stewardship of which is truly important, the spiritual, called by Jesus in verse 11, true riches. How well do you use your material possessions? has everything to do with how God trusts you with that which is the true riches of verse 11, is the point to be learned. Now verse 13. Verse 13. This is the end of our reading. At verse 13, he said, no one can serve two masters, for either he'll hate one and love the other, or he'll be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Jesus comments upon priority. He's talked about the principle of using material things to receive the eternal. He talks about stewardship, and then he talks about that which is our priorities. The real motive that inspires fidelity is love, is what Jesus says at verse 13. You cannot serve two masters. You either hate one or love the other. And he's talking about material things versus spiritual things in the context. Which one is your master? And he said you must decide which master you're going to serve, like two bosses on two jobs. Which one will you serve? And so at the heart of the proper use of material things is getting your priorities straight, is what Jesus is saying here in this context. When serving mammon, success depends on how much you gain. When serving God, success depends upon how much you give. And that's the point Jesus is making. Now, let's spend the rest of our time talking about lessons. We've looked at the parable of verses 1 through 8. And as Jesus concluded that, he made the point and the punch with reference to that at verse 8. Here's what this is about. And then he makes three comments about that in verses 10 to 13. There are some things that we learn from this parable that we can take home and say, this is something we can put to use. Here's the first. And that is, we are stewards. If I learned anything from this parable, I learned that we are stewards. All of our money, all of our possessions, all of our blessings, all of our time, all of our abilities, and even our bodies themselves belong to God, and we are stewards of those. A steward means that, I remind you, a manager who manages what belongs to someone else. If you are a steward for someone who is a multimillionaire, you don't own that money, you're just managing it for them. And you're managing that body for the Lord. You're managing this money for the Lord and your possessions and your time and your abilities. We're all stewards. And thus we're all stewards of everything that we possess. Often people talk about my money, my body, my time, and I'll do with it as I please, when in actuality we must give an account of all before God. This steward was called in and said, give an account for the wasting of my goods. If you thought about the fact God may call you into account in the day of judgment, you've wasted your body, my body that I gave you. You've wasted the time I gave you. You wasted money that I gave you. And we may be called into account. So there's a lesson about stewardship. I learned another practical thing, and perhaps the point Jesus is really driving home at the hardest, and that is, look hard for every opportunity. Look under every crevice, or in every crevice and under every rock, for the opportunity that you have to accomplish your purpose. That's what the steward did. He's a man who had already used every opportunity to gain for himself, and his master caught him, and he uses one last time to hit him again. You'd think he'd learned his lesson, but he didn't. What he did was, he said, I've just got a few days left, and I'm still on the job, and I still have access to the office of a steward. I'm going to use that and take care of myself. And so Jesus said he was wise in doing that. We must ask, how can I use this circumstance to reach whatever goal that I have? We must ever keep watchful eyes present of how that we must relate things to the service of God and how we could so use everything in the service of God. And how often do we seize the opportunities? We claim our goal is to serve God, and yet we may be irregular. We admit there are dangers, and yet we ignore them. We may work tirelessly for 30 years trying to pay a mortgage off for a house that will decay, and yet give little attention to the eternal mansion. The point is, are we using every opportunity? As the steward did, he's looking for every opportunity to take care of himself, and he did. Are we taking care of ourselves, or are we taking care of the work of the Lord? Trench observed, the children of light, being thus rebuked, that they are not at half the pains to win heaven, which the men of this world are to win earth. Are you working as hard at winning heaven as the children of the world are at winning earth? One of the lessons that we learn is that of priority, of what is important. And I see that in this context. If we're not careful, our priorities can get out of balance. We find ourselves to the point that we're working harder for material things than we are for the spiritual. And that's what Jesus is talking about at verse 13. No man can serve two masters. I like what Taylor said concerning verse 13. He said, the things which in theory he calls secondary, he often allows to become primary. Speaking of one whose priorities are skewed. And very frequently loses sight of the interest of eternity in his devotion of those of time. That is, here are things we know we ought to be to the top priority. Here's things we know to be secondary, but often we get that skewed and we're giving emphasis to something that's far or less important and neglecting that which is the greater. But I learned a final lesson, and that is about urgency and promptness. Go back to our text at verse 6. At verse 6. And I want you to notice the steward's time was soon to be cut off. His master had already told him his time is over, it's gone, it's finished, you're fired. But he has a few more days on the job. But at verse 6, he tells the man who owes something, he asks him to act quickly. He acts promptly, and he said, this is what I'm going to do. He doesn't say, sometime I'm going to see what I can get these guys to do a favor for me. But he doesn't let grass grow under his feet, but he said, do this quickly. He urged the debtor to say, he's saying to them, write quickly, write 50. We've got to hurry. We don't have much time. It's urgent. You've got to reduce your debt quickly. Why has it got to be quickly? Not for the benefit of the debtor, though the debtor may think that. Not for the benefit of the master. This is for the benefit of the steward. I'm about to lose my job. I don't know when he's going to come in and march me out of here. So write it quickly. Let's get this done quickly. And so the next one, let's do this quickly. He acts promptly. And he acts with urgency. Now go back to verse 9 one more time. And that is, Jesus said, when you fail, when it fails, is what he means. What do you mean when you fail or when it fails? He talks about this unrighteous mammon. It's going to fail. Your life here on earth is going to end. Your opportunity is going to end. And your use of material things is going to end. Rather than the covetousness, verse 14, which is condemned, this is something that you use properly, is what he's saying. And so our time is about to soon be over. Trench observed, there are martyrs of the devil who put to shame the saints of God and running as they do with more alacrity to death than these to life. The people of the world often are running harder and faster toward hell, trying to get there as fast as they can, greater than we are in running in the direction of heaven. That's the point of the parable according to verse 8. So what have we seen tonight? We've seen Jesus spoke a parable of the unjust steward. Wasn't commended for his dishonesty. Wasn't commended for his mistreatment of others. What he was commended for was his shrewdness. And Jesus then makes comment about using the material things shrewdly in order to gain what we are after, and that is heaven itself. And then we learn some very practical things, hopefully, as we look at the parable of the unjust steward. There may be one or more present this evening who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we